Well, I never had control over it. It was never something that I could control, and so it was just kind of beyond me, the whole experience. I was just desperate to, like, get a job and do something, you know, and so, you know, when you don't have a sense of who you are as an artist and a real sense of, like, pride in that, you can get really taken advantage of, and that's what happened. So it was just kind of alarming because it was all out of my reach, and now I could never imagine something like that going on, but I was so young then, I didn't really know.
It's the podcast that is as delicious as a slice of heaven in your mouth, The Feast of Fools.
On today's show, we'll be talking to outspoken comedian, filmmaker, and writer Margaret Cho.
She's best remembered as the star of the television sitcom All American Girl.
Her album, I Am the One That I Want, was nominated for a Grammy.
Unfortunately, she didn't win a Grammy for that CD, but she did win an award for Worst Dressed.
Well, listen as we talk to Cho about her family and politics,
and why she thinks her vagina would write a monologue about the sea. Stay tuned. I'm Fausto Furnow.
And I'm Mark Villian.
Make it crash! Bang, boom. That is Ellen Rosner with Crash, Bang, Boom from her CD, The Perfect Malcontent. And
you can buy that through Amazon, right? But not through iTunes.
You can't buy it. If you buy it through iTunes, you'll get the wrong song. iTunes, you know, this is the problem with being an independent musician, is that you put your stuff on iTunes, you go through all the money and time and trouble, and they put the wrong song.
I know. I think it's The Pretenders or something. I don't know who it is.
It's...
It sounds
it's
like
so
Chrissy
crazy.
Hines. I don't know.
You know, that might actually happen because we're planning out eventually one day to release our own CD. And I think they're going to switch it with something. They're going to put us with John Ashcroft's new CD. God bless America. Something like that.
America.
Well, this is our 300th episode,
congratulations,
people.
Congratulations, us. Congratulations to you, Fausto.
Congratulations to you, Mark Phelan.
And congratulations to you, the listener, for,
Sitting through
the 300 of these shows.
Some of them, people still, they started at the very beginning and they never stopped.
Because how many people do you think actually listened to the first show on the first day or two it was out there?
Well, I don't know.
Because there's 25?
No way of knowing unless you guys write to us.
Yeah.
Should we do something nice for that first listener?
The what? The first listener?
Yeah, the first person who ever downloaded our podcast. There has to be somebody.
How do you prove it?
I don't know. You just have to say you are.
Well, you know what? We can go back to the email. Or I don't know when we got the email, but...
Oh, that's true. It's probably getting one from, you know, my mom saying,
You guys swore too much.
Well, we're really excited. We're going to be talking to Margaret Cho shortly. Did you know, actually, that she holds a distinction of the feature film from her off-Broadway show, I Am the One That I Want, has broken all records for grossing more money per print than any film history. It's like $1.4 million with only 9 prints.
Wow.
Now,
so what does that mean?
Knows,
people went to the movie theater to watch the film?
No, sweetie. They bought the DVD. The prints of the actual... I don't know. I mean, I'm just reading this off of a press release.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it means,
well, there was 9 prints. They only made 9 prints of the film.
Let me just put it this way.
Admit she's rich.
No, 1.4. She has wealth.
Okay.
If Bill Gates woke up tomorrow, as Chris Rock says, with Margaret Cho's money, he'd kill himself.
Yeah, probably.
He'd be like, I'm giving up. Well, you know, one thing that we always like to do with our celebrity guests is make a cocktail in their honor.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark's sort of put together special cocktail
Para
Margarita Cholita.
Margarita Cholita. It's a blue cho. This thing's so great.
What are you making? What's the name of the cocktail, first of all?
Blue cho.
A blue cho?
Yeah. Blue cho. Because smell this
that
vodka.
That sounds very Hispanic.
I know.
What is this here?
Well, it's blueberry vodka. It's blueberry. It's new. I haven't seen it before either.
It smells like gum.
It smells like, I think it smells
it's very
like
girly.
Dolly Madison, those little blueberry pies. Did you ever have those?
No, don't really like pies. Those.
So I got some of that. I have some of this, and then I have some. I have some Korean plum wine because you know how I like to mix vodka with wine, kind of like.
Yeah.
Because vermouth, like when you make a martini, it's vodka and vermouth. When vermouth has a specific kind of flavor, so I was like, because it kind of mellows it out and it gives it that sangria, and then I'm gonna do a little bit of.
So
7
this is kind of like
too.
A. It's a very. This is. I can imagine if when Margaret Cho used to drink.
Right.
This is something she would have gotten plastered on.
She would have liked it too, and we can also put a little blue curacao in there, just a little bit for a little blue color. So it's blueberry, and you like blue stuff.
Oh, I do like blue drinks.
I'll pour that. I'll do a little. Let's see. I'll do a little 7 count of this.
But people don't know that stuff. Mark.
Well, it's 3/4. About 3/4 of the drink is going to be the vodka.
Okay.
Okay. And then
so you're making this in ratios,
right? Like kind of
ratio.
Give
people like specific measurements.
Well,
because Americans.
It all depends on your glass size, though.
So let's just say 3 shot glasses.
Let's say you have a 12 ounce glass.
Keep it simple, people.
What's simple? 10 ounces.
Just say, take the cap and fill it 3 times. Something like that.
But what if it doesn't fill your glass?
Well, then you do another one.
Okay.
Let them figure it out. But keep it simple, please.
So,
yeah.
So do like 3 parts of vodka.
3 parts vodka.
Okay. Blueberry
infused
vodka. 1 part of the plum wine.
I'm writing this down here. We'll also be putting the recipe on the website. So,
and just like a dash of blue curacao, just to make it the palest pink.
A couple of drops.
Just so you get a little blue color. And then I always like to lighten stuff up, but I'll put a little 7-Up or Sprite in there. Just to kind of do that. I'll shake it up because it gives it some fizz. It needs fizz.
Oh, I'm excited. Mm.
And then
the room smells like you've been chewing gum or something.
I see. I love it.
Let me see.
I had this weekend. You haven't had it yet.
Cheers, baby.
Cheers.
Well, pour some for me.
Here.
Okay. Let me see. Mmm.
Yummy, yummy.
You know, actually, I like this drink. Actually, smells better than it tastes.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Well, should we go? Anyways, wish us 300 shows.
300 shows. Concho.
Con el cho.
El cho concho.
Margarita Cholita, let's take it away. Hi, Margaret. This is Fausto Furnos.
And Mark Filian from the Feast of Fools podcast.
How are you?
Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be speaking to you. We've been trying to get you on the show for years.
Oh, wow.
So it's
a
really nice treat. We wanted to start off with a question about asking you about the 2004 election.
Uh-huh.
You were really involved in sort of lobbying and speaking out against President Bush, and I think you got a lot of hate emails and a lot of conservative backlash against you, didn't you? What was sort of your reaction when you started receiving all these emails in your inbox and they were sort of doing like threats against you?
Well, it's really like you feel like you've arrived. You know, I mean, that's like such a great feeling. I think it's wonderful. It's so great when people are really mad like that because it's so stupid. And it really shows that, you know, you really can move people and change people. I mean, because it's like for every like death threat or whatever, there's like 1,000 more thank yous and 1,000 more, oh, you've changed our lives. And, you know, and the more like angry people are, the more negative, the more like they use like racial slurs and homophobic language, then you realize that the people that think the way that like that are really just so dumb.
And but weren't you like a bit scared? I mean, someone saying, you know, wanting to threaten you physically is a bit frightening, isn't it? I mean,
no, because it's not really. I mean, I don't think it's that scary. I don't know because I.
Maybe do you think like
she has bodyguards, right?
You have. Is that why you don't?
She's got Jackie Chan as a bodyguard.
Because we were watching your Assassin's DVD last night, and at the end of the show, you just like bam took out of the building.
Yeah.
What was up with that?
I don't really hang out because I don't really. I don't really know what to do. Like I just kind of like I perform and that's my work and then I'm done. Like I never go out to like clubs or anything. That's just not really my style. So.
Well, you know, Kathy Griffin hangs out in the audience.
Uh-huh.
and shoves her DVDs down people's throats.
Well, that's great. That's her style. You know, she's very gregarious and really a social animal. And I'm really not. You know, I'm not.
You're
like that.
So. You're the quiet, shy type in your normal life.
Uh huh.
Oh, that's
very
interesting.
Much so.
Margaret, what's your writing process like? I mean, when you're putting these shows together. And you came up with sort of a fabulous quote here, is Laura Bush's pussy tastes like Lysol? Were you cleaning the bathroom at the time? And you said, hey, this would be really funny. Or
no, I what happened was I remember like spraying some at one point and like getting it in my mouth, which is so disgusting.
Really? Well, you know, that stuff is not good for you, girlfriend.
No, it was like just kind of like a really like a little bit, you know, like it was just kind of in the air. And I tasted it and I was like, ew.
Well, you have to learn how to process it because you can actually process that into alcohol and drink that.
Ooh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Well, you're a pretty outspoken individual, and it seems that you have a really close relationship with your family and your mom and dad. I mean, your father's a comedy writer,
mm-hmm.
and he writes jokes for Korean businessmen.
Right.
Is he always is he ever going, you know, Margaret, I could write material for you.
No, he doesn't really do that because he knows that it's very different. Like I don't really tell jokes so much as I think have many revelations and these stories that kind of spring forth and these takes on things. So they're never traditional jokes, which he's very much a traditional joke teller.
Oh, he's like, why the chicken crossed the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of stuff that plays well in Korea?
I suppose so.
Okay. Well, have you ever thought about going to Korea and doing? I mean, there's gays there who would probably adore you.
Yeah, no, I think it would be great. I don't have enough of an understanding of the language. I don't have a grasp of it enough to do a performance. Which is, you know, I don't know if that'll ever happen, but.
But you know, like Oprah's going to Africa, and this might be a really good thing for you.
That's hot. Well, yeah, you know, it's possible. Certainly,
go open a school in South Korea.
Yeah,
you know, and like help women in South Korea and stuff. Mm-hmm. And although you grew up in San Francisco, and your ties to South Korea are pretty. You know, several generations.
I don't have very many ties.
You're like, I'm sorry, I don't speak your language.
No.
Margaret, let me ask you. In Jeffrey Eugenides' Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Middlesex, he has an Asian character, a woman, who dates a hermaphrodite. And she wants to know, are you sure you're a hermaphrodite? Are you sure you're not gay? Because I've dated so many men, and they all end up gay. It's as though Asian women are the last stop on the hetero train. Have you had that kind of experience? Have you dated? Because you have such a gay following. These guys are kind of straight, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, you're gay.
No, you know, not that way. I've turned a couple of women gay.
Oh, nice. Oh. That's hot.
I haven't had that experience with... I've actually turned a gay man onto women also.
You're a lot of straight women's hero then.
Yeah.
The ones that are like, I wish I could make my best friend gay.
I have done
for
that.
Me.
Yeah. So that's happened, but it's not... It's not happened the other way. Like I've never had the experience of being with a guy and then he's been gay later. So that's I don't know what that means.
All right, I thought it was a funny stop, the last stop on the hetero train. So
yeah,
I thought I'd throw that out to you.
Could be true.
But and so we listened to your interview with Howard Stern and you talked about being married.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still married?
Yes, of course.
Excellent. And you guys, and so
there's a lot of anal sex happening there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of you guys are kind of polyamorous.
Yeah.
I think it's polyamorous week on the Feast of Fools this week. So.
We've had so many guests.
That's happening like, more and more these days, isn't it? People are being much more open.
Realistic. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's just, you know, the way that things are. That it's just, to me, that's just sort of normal, what normal is.
Well, it certainly, it's normal for you, and it definitely seems like you guys have a very strong relationship.
Yeah.
But it's like, do you think that Howard Stern really was sort of grossed out when you started talking about fucking your husband with a dildo? I mean,
I don't know. I don't think he's possibly grossed out. I mean, he's sort of seen it all.
Well, you were saying, like, in your stage act that he was, like, he's just like, ah,
no. I
think he was jealous.
Yeah.
Well, you're such a beautiful, I saw you when you were last time in Chicago, and you're looking fabulous.
Thank you.
What are you doing? Are you doing, like, Pilates or something? Are you gone vegetarian?
No. Well, I'm a belly dancer. That's part of it.
Are you going to work that into your act?
Which is great. No, it's very separate. You know, my dance work and kind of doing comedy, they're not really related because they're sort of the mastery of different things. So it's not something that I feel like I can really blend together. But that's mainly like my thing that I do. And so it's a very pleasurable thing. And I love it.
I would think that belly dancing would really help improve your sex life. Have you found that to be true?
I don't think that's true.
No, it's a very sexy dance.
It is sexy, but it's such a different experience. And so much of it is really about connecting with women that in a non-sexual way, it's kind of not, it's really beyond sex. It's great.
Mm. Now, you said in an interview that you look at your comedy as a direct assault on the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. Yet it seems your family's really, really happy with your comedy and adore you and stand by you 100%. I mean, your mother's like out there signing autographs.
Yeah, right. Well, so, yeah, I mean, the way that I was raised was very conservatively and very closed-mindedly. But then also, my parents had a very tolerant attitude towards gays and lesbians. So that they were, in their own way, quite unusual. And, you know, they were very Christian, too.
Have they sort of stepped a little bit away from Christianity as you grew up and sort of re-educated your parents? I think a lot of gays and lesbians and bisexual people really have to sort of re-educate their families.
Yes, and I think that's true. I don't think they've stepped away, though. I think that they're still very much involved with their own blend of spirituality and Christianity, which doesn't have a lot to do with homophobia and hatred and taking rights away from women and all the stuff that it's come to be known as.
Was your family, like, putting pressure on you to have a baby or anything like that?
No, not really.
Well, that's good. No. Do you want to have a baby?
I don't know. I thought I did, and then I don't know, and I'm not really sure.
You'd be a fabulous... You know, all these gay men would want to be reincarnated as your son.
I know. That would be fun. I think it would be great, but I'm just kind of like, I don't know if my life is suited for that yet. We'll see.
Well, we do a little thing on our show called a celebrity word association because we're kind of lazy interviewers.
Okay.
And we don't have much time, Margaret. So we got to get deep into the subconsciousness of Margaret Cho.
Okay.
So I want you to take a deep breath with me. That's not deep. Do it again. Okay. Oh, I'm getting a little bit turned on here. So I'm going to, Mark and I are going to shout words at you, like a tag team,
mm-hmm.
And you don't have any time. You're just going to say the first word that comes to your mind. And this is a podcast, so you can say whatever you want. You can fuck, shit, cunt, piss.
Okay.
And I know that's in your vocabulary, so.
Okay,
ready?
Uh-huh.
Flower.
Chloe.
Pink.
Lady Bunny.
Heart.
Ann Wilson.
Fisting.
Lube.
Uterus.
Pizza.
Dog.
Cat.
Woman.
Man.
Rainbow.
Gay.
Church.
Picnic.
Honor.
Battalion.
Stereo.
Dairy.
Rutabaga.
Yuck.
Television.
Fun.
Well, was it fun?
let's
talk about your experience on being sort of swept into the line, into mainstream, the world of sitcoms.
Oh, yeah.
In the 1990s. That was almost like over a decade ago, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You were the star of All American Girl,
mm-hmm.
which was sort of a breakthrough sitcom because it featured an Asian bisexual young woman. You.
Yeah, but they didn't really.
They didn't really. What was sort of going on in through your mind as that process began to happen and the television program began to take form and you started realizing that you sort of have lost control over your identity?
Oh, well, I never had control over it. Mm-hmm. It was never something that I could control. And so it was just kind of beyond, me, the whole experience. I was just desperate to, like, get a job and do something, you know, and so, you know, when you don't have a sense of who you are as an artist and a real sense of, like, pride in that, you can get really taken advantage of, and that's what happened. So it was just kind of alarming because it was all out of my reach, and now I could never imagine something like that going on, but I was so young then, I didn't really know.
Was that a formative process? I mean, a formative experience for you as a comedian, but also as a outspoken person?
Yeah, definitely, because it taught me that the value of having your own voice and being really kind of committed to yourself, as I just wasn't then, so I didn't know what I was doing.
But was there a time that when this was happening, you said, I think I finally made it as an artist, as a comedian?
No.
Did you feel like your life was, and your career was in limbo at that time?
Or? Oh, yeah, certainly. And I mean, it was just never, it didn't really take off on my own as an artist for a long time. So it finally started making sense to me maybe 5 years ago or something.
So is that when you sort of decided, I've found my voice as Margaret Cho? This is what my life is about and my career as a comedian?
Yeah, I think so.
And what was going on in your mind when you finally realized that?
Well, it was just a matter of, like, getting to a point where I could do these shows, like, and I could go on the road with them and I could film them and make these stand-up comedy movies. So probably around then, that's when it started to become very exciting, and it became a viable thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're one of the most successful comedians of our time right now. Your DVDs, broken records, and your tours have sell out in most major cities. Can you tell us a little bit about the show that you're going to be doing here in Chicago, Freedom 06?
Yes, this is like a new, it's like a new thing that I haven't done before. This is like all things that I've done in shows that are my favorite things that I've done in the last four tours that I haven't done in a long time.
So you're going to do belly dancing?
No.
I want to see you belly dance.
Oh, well, then you can come to, I do, like, sometimes in, like, Middle Eastern restaurants in certain cities, but...
Really?
Well, we'll
you just kind of, like, anonymously go, and
yeah.
Then you're like, it's Margarita Cho.
Yeah. But it's fun. I mean, that's for fun. That's not for performance, like, for in a theater. You know, to me, it's, like, kind of a different thing.
So you do, but so what is Freedom 06? Is it sort of a continuation of
Assassin
and?
No, it's all old material that I haven't done in a really long time. So it's all these, like, the greatest hits, like my favorite things to do, like my mother and stories about shitting and, you know, all these, like, fun, exciting things and shows that I really love to do, but I haven't done in years. So that, and then also a lot of new material that I haven't written yet, which is will get written between now and then, and so it's lots of different things.
Well, so you're pretty successful these days. Has ABC television executives come back to you and said, you know, we're really, really sorry. We want you to, you know, come back.
They're all fired,
Margaret.
Anyway. Everybody got fired. Everybody always gets fired from there, and, like,
really?
Totally different people.
So these people hate you today? I mean, they're like,
no.
Margaret Cho, I don't want to hear that name.
No, they're all great. You know, it's weird how people, you see them over and over again in different jobs, in different guises. They come back in different positions, and it's weird. Nobody
so it's
has
true.
Feeling.
It's impossible to kill television executives.
No, they come back in a different form. It's weird.
It's the seven-headed Hydra.
Yeah.
Now, Margaret, you have a huge, huge, huge gay following. Which came first? Did you have the gay following, or was it the gay jokes when you first started doing stand-up? What was your act like when you first started doing it?
I always had gay jokes. I mean, I always had jokes about the way my life was, because I was always such a typical San Francisco fag hag that these experiences were very prevalent. And so the audience that I courted was always the same. It's the same as it is now, you know. It was always like that.
Okay.
Let's talk about sort of the fact that you're touring so much.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about deciding, like, for example, for this show in Chicago, deciding what to include in a program? What's your process like in putting together a live show? I mean, are you working with a director and they're going, you know, Margaret, you just can't talk about that?
Oh, no,
it's
no.
Someone's I mean, so going like, it's not funny or...
No. I just rely on whatever...
So you follow your intuition mostly?
Yeah, what I think is good and what I think will work. And that's how it actually works out. I mean, that's just the best way. So You know, I never really, I don't know. I mean, I don't really change what I do from venue to venue. It mostly changes with, like, the show that I'm doing, like, but the time period that I'm performing in, you know, what is interesting to me at that point.
Hmm. Let's talk about your website.
Okay.
You have this wonderful blog that you're sort of like, you're putting so much of your life into that blog.
Yeah.
And so much of your life is also on stage. Is there ever any decision that, you know, I'm not going to write about this because this is my privacy and I want to keep that
for you? There's certainly a lot of that.
What is that? I mean, without revealing these things, but how do you decide something is off limits?
Well, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a privacy issue. It's just kind of like, oh, well, that's just not interesting to anybody but me. You know, that's what it comes down to. I mean, to me, there's so many things to write about, that yet there are things that are so personal that they lose any kind of importance for anybody else. So then it's boring.
But it's sort of sometimes gossipy, though, you know, because I was reading that you broke up with a longtime collaborator of yours, but, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, was that like, do you think that was important to put on a blog for your fans to read? Or
really, like, valid, you know, in terms of what I was feeling. And I mean, it's an important thing to put out there. And in my mind, you know, it's kind of like what's coloring everything.
But why not pick up the phone and just, like, call him or her and say, you know, this is really how I feel? Or was that also part of the separation?
It's part of the separation is that we can't speak.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so
it's like a divorce.
Yeah, it's terrible. And so part of that is kind of relaying the messages, but, you know, letting it just be that.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's also, you know, like what I was feeling at the time, and an interesting thing to talk about and to write about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is there any chance that HBO is going to have you do like a series or I mean, Bam Bam and Celeste seem to be doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Is your film any talk about turning that into some sort of like sitcom or a pilot for a television program?
So I don't think I would. I don't know. I don't know if that necessarily has that life to it, possibly. But, you know, who knows?
Well, so are you saying is television sort of a dead medium for you, or?
I don't know. I mean, it's all possible.
Come on, Margaret.
I don't really know what.
You're so vague.
Huh?
Well, I mean, is it out at this point? Is it out of the question for you? Are you touring so much and being so successful as a live performer? Then, in a sense, the internet sort of superseded television for you.
Right. Well, I would love to do TV. I would love it, but I don't know if that's really possible because of the way that things are. I don't know.
You could be on Lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I could see you as a doing like a battered woman of the week sort of movie.
That's great.
That
like
would be fun. But you seem to be a woman that's very, very much in charge of her own career, and it would be hard for you to give up any kind of control.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. Like, if television's the right thing, or I would love to make more movies. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, and let's talk about Richard Pryor's.
Mm-hmm.
When he his passing away, I mean, you said that he was really someone who affected your work quite a bit, and you're compared by a lot of people as sort of the modern day equivalent of that.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on that?
Well, it was really sad that he died. It was really something that, you know, I know a lot of comics that of our generation, like, they really felt it because he was so influential, and you know, really terrible thing because he was very relatively young, and you know, I mean, I think it's just sad that we don't have that voice anymore. But he was certainly
You can be that voice. I mean,
mm-hmm.
In a sense. And why do you think you are so outspoken? I mean, do you think your parents go, well, you know, it's like we saw this coming when she was a little girl, or is it growing up in San Francisco, or?
No, I think that it's just having the opportunity, and I think that the way that I believe politically, the things that I believe in, and that, you know, the kind of choices that I make, and the people that I hang around, you know, whatever, all of these things, that they really need a voice right now. We need a voice for change, and I think that's really important.
Did you always have that voice, though? Like, as a child, were you the class clown? Were you the one the teachers were like, Margaret Cho, sit down and be quiet?
No, I was very shy. And I am a shy person by nature, mm-hmm. so...
I can see it.
Well, when was the turning point that said, I'm funny out, and yeah. I can be a comedian?
I think right when I started, I was 16 and I already knew that I could do this and I just wanted to set out and do it. And I was very ambitious and very bold and was very committed to it.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the Democratic Party in the United States. Mm-hmm. You've met President Clinton. Mm-hmm. You've met John Kerry. What was the, sort of the comparison between the two presidents? the two president wannabe and the real deal. I mean,
well, I think Clinton's very charismatic, and I think he's great. I think he was a wonderful president, and I thought John Kerry was also okay, but he didn't have the same kind of strength and conviction mm-hmm. that he would have needed. I mean, I think that. There was just a lot of conservatism there, too, in John Kerry's...
Well, you said he was like an old hickory tree or something.
He was like an Ent, you know, from the Lord of the Rings, the big...
I know. It's
like... people. He's so tall and just so, like, slow and dry and... So
well, if President Clinton took you into his Oval Office, because you're cute,
uh-huh.
and he said, you know, I'm the president,
uh-huh.
you know... Will you give me a blowjob, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think it's
totally hot.
I think it's every patriotic American's duty to give yeah. the President of the United States, whether Democrat. Would you give President Bush a blowjob?
Oh, no.
You wouldn't?
No.
It might make him change his mind.
No.
Do it for the
it's
country, Margaret.
It's not worth it.
Margaret, you need to do this.
No.
You're like the. You could be like the. You could transform a whole political party.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I so you're like the Matrix, you know what I'm saying? Now you've
received blue.
What is wrong with the Democratic Party today, though? I mean, I'm trying to get you. Seems like a person who sort of has your pulse on people's sensibilities and ideas. Where are we as a nation right now?
Well, the Democrats are kind of they're not really together on anything, and they don't really have a self. Awareness, like a self-conviction, like the Republicans do. Like Republicans, they're like so like self-righteous, and they're so like demanding. And I think that that's sort of what the Democrats need is that kind of demanding urgency.
Why do you think we don't have that? Or I mean, why do you think they don't have that? And what are we missing as a nation to try to get rid of these kind of dangerous types of politicians?
I think, well, we're missing a lot of people's real anger and this desperate need to change things. That's what we're missing. Is this?
You don't think Americans are angry enough?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
Mm. Well, Margaret, we want to thank you so much for coming on our show today. We're going to do a breakdown.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to give you 20 questions, and we don't want you to think too hard on these.
Okay.
They're fast.
We're going to tag team you here.
Okay, so first, this is the kind of questions that everybody sort of wants to know but never dares asking you.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, we need to know what your favorite color is.
I think it's red.
Okay, and what's your age in relationship to Larry King?
Much younger.
Did you ever have a childhood a pet when you were a kid, and what was the name and the species?
It was a mutt. It was a dog. His name was Lucky.
Okay. And what's your favorite thing about your body?
Oh, I like my tattoo.
Ooh, what's it of?
It's a snakes and a cherry blossom tree.
Now, nice. If you could change one thing about your personality, what would you change?
I think I would be less shy.
Okay. What's on your iPod?
I don't have an iPod.
Oh, somebody send Margaret Cho an iPod.
Help a sister out there.
I don't have one.
Steve Jobs, if you're listening, hook up the Cho, honey. What's the best thing that happened to you last year?
What's the best thing that happened to me last year? I got a Chihuahua.
Aww. What's the worst thing that happened to you this year?
What's the worst thing? Oh, I got a terrible, terrible, terrible cold that lasted almost 2 months.
Wow.
Oh, Jesus. What's your favorite snack?
I like chocolate. Anything.
Okay. What's your first love?
My first love, probably ballet.
And do you play any musical instruments?
No.
Not even the one hold skin?
No. Okay. If your vagina wrote its own monologue, what would it say?
It would probably be about the sea.
Okay.
Are you sure you're not just 100% lesbian, Margaret?
Probably.
So your husband's getting worried now.
Yes.
If we went over to your house, what kind of cocktail would you fix for us?
I would probably just make just like a straight up like anything. I don't know how to make cocktails.
Oh, so you just pour like a vodka and
yeah.
She's like, here's vodka. You want ice?
On the rocks. Okay. Everything.
What's the most annoying thing about popular culture to you?
I think that it's too fast.
Mm. And your favorite fat celebrity, the fattest person, famous person you know?
Let's see. Probably I would say maybe.
But when I say fat, who do you think of?
Well, I can't think of his name. He was Roseanne's husband.
Oh, John Goodman.
John Goodman.
I'm like blanking on his name. John Goodman. Yeah.
Okay. So what's the biggest waste of money for you?
The biggest waste?
Mm-hmm.
Probably anything like body product related. Like any kind of scrub or like cream. I love anything like that.
Well, so you don't drink and do drugs now, do you? Or
no.
What gets you high?
Like the body lotion thing.
Like, body lotion.
No, you got to do
this. I love.
I got to do this question here as Barbara Walters here. If you were a twee, what kind of twee would you be?
Willow.
Do you believe in God or life after death?
Probably.
And I have one special. What's the deal with Koreans and spam? Why do Koreans love spam so much?
I don't know. It's all Asians, though.
Is it all Asians?
I think it's all Asians.
Wow.
Okay. We all love it.
Do you, and you eat it yourself?
Not really, but okay. I have eaten it. I do love it.
Margaret, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
And making your podcasting debut.
Yay, thank you.
So,
and tell our listeners, Margaret's on. She's in our top 8 on our MySpace account.
Yeah.
So.
You have a MySpace too, don't you?
Yes.
Yes. So can we be on your top 8, Margaret, please?
Okay.
We love you so much.
Thanks, Margaret.
Have a wonderful time in Chicago. Best of luck to you, okay?
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, Margaret.
Bye-bye.
Margaret Cho lives in San Francisco, okay. And she's going to be coming to Chicago, Illinois, in Sunday, July 16th at the Chicago Theater. The name of the show is Freedom 06, and she'll also be appearing at the Gay Games V11. So it's like
V11.
Six, seven.
That's seven.
Seven. Opening ceremonies on Saturday, July 15th. Uh-huh. And also her DVD. What's the name of the DVD?
Assassin.
Assassin is available on our website, feastoffools.net.
We get them all. They're all funny. The Assassin, the I am the one that I want. She's hysterical.
Yeah, it's totally worth the price.
So
that's it. And that's our 300th show.
With Margaret Cho. El Cho con Cho.
El Cho con Cho. So I'm Fausto Fernos.
And I'm Mark Fillion.
We want to remind you, visit our website, feastoffools.net, and comment on this show and any of our other shows.
Right. And if you'd like to email us, please email us at feastoffools@gmail.com. We also are on MySpace, so if you're on MySpace or our space, get on our space. So it's myspace.com/feastoffools.
And take a crapper on our frapper mat, put a picture of yourself, and find out if there's any other listeners to the Feast of Fools that live in your remote part of the world. That's frapper.com/feastoffools. I'm Fausto Fernos, wishing you a wonderful day. And
I'm Mark
and
Fillion.
Be outspoken. You know, Margaret Cho can do it, and so can you.
And so can you. And you know what else you can do for our show is you can buy a t-shirt to support the show. This is our 300th show. If you would like to see 300 more fabulous shows, please, please go to the website. The little button on the side says buy a t-shirt. Please buy two. Even if you've already bought one, support the show.
Buy another one.
Get another one.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thinking of... It's not hard to say that the market dictates emotion when you got to remultiply the quotient by the dividends. Still, I wasn't willing to pay for a vanity on the hour, only hoping to retain the power for the one who spends. Credit that you leverage against the whole future bathing. Credit that you leverage against your divorcee. Moving to New York and leaving California waiting.